Hello, everyone. We started Braille is Beautiful probably 12 years ago with the idea of wanting to introduce people to the idea that Braille doesn't have to be slow and laborious, that Braille can be fun and read with flair. So we started by having people read a skit or a short play during convention. And this has grown into an activity where we have some music and sound effects, courtesy of Byron Lee. And people start asking me back in July if we are able to, what the script is going to be and if they can have a part. It used to be we only had people who were really proficient Braille readers who had been reading Braille all their lives, but we have expanded to welcome new Braille readers, Braille learners, as well as seasoned veterans. So we now will present to you this year's 2016 Braille is Beautiful skit, which is based on a story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, a Sherlock Holmes story called The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle. And I'll have all of the cast introduce themselves, starting down here. Podium, if everybody would just give their name and the part that they are going to read.
Oh, where's our? I'm Amy, and I'm going to play Watson.
I'm Ken Shad, and I'm going to play the part James Ryder.
Bill Reif, and I will play the newspaper, NFB Newsline of the time, I guess.
Denise Avant, and I'm playing Breckenridge.
Linda Handel, I'm going to be playing Peterson. Next.
I'm Bob Gardner, and I will be playing the part of Henry Baker.
Steve Hostellis plays Windigate.
I'm Jada Pumphrey, and I'm going to be playing Mrs. Oakshot.
And last but not least,
I'm Emma Meyer, and I will be playing the part of Sherlock Holmes.
So, with no further ado, I turn it over to our wonderful cast.
Oh, I see you're busy. Am I interrupting?
Not at all. I'm glad to have a friend with whom I can discuss these things. I've been examining this old hat. Some points are rather interesting.
I suppose this hat has some deadly story to it. Is it a clue to the punishment of some criminal?
No. Only one of those little incidents that happen when you have 4 million human beings all jostling each other within a few square miles. We see many a little problem that may be striking and bizarre without being criminal.
So true.
You know Peterson, the commissioner? Watson?
Surely. Yes, I do.
It is to him that this trophy belongs.
Surely he restores them to their owner?
No, he found it. Its owner is unknown. Don't look at it as a battered hat, but as an intellectual problem. It arrived on Christmas morning in company with a good fat goose. I have no doubt the goose is roasting at this moment on Peterson's fire. The facts are these. At about 4 o'clock on Christmas morning, Peterson was returning home from a holiday celebration. In front of him, he saw, in the gaslight, a tallish man walking with a slight stagger and carrying a white goose slung over his shoulder. As Peterson reached the corner, a row broke out between this stranger and a little knot of ruffians.
Surely he was talking to
one of the toughs knocked off the man's hat. He raised his stick to defend himself and accidentally smashed the shop window behind him. Peterson rushed to protect the stranger, but the man must have been shocked at the breaking of the window. Seeing a person in uniform, he dropped his goose and took to his heels. He vanished into the maze of streets at the back of Tottenham Court Road. The roughs had also fled, and Peterson was left with this battered hat and a most unimpeachable Christmas goose.
Surely he restored them to their owners?
My dear fellow, there lies the problem. The words "for Mrs. Henry Baker" were printed on a card that was tied to the bird's left leg. The initials HB are legible on the lining of this hat. But there are thousands of Bakers and hundreds of Henry Bakers in this city of ours. It's not easy to restore lost property to any of them.
What did Peterson do?
He brought both hat and goose round to me on Christmas morning. The goose we retained until today. This morning, Peterson carried it home to fulfill its ultimate destiny. I continue to retain the hat.
What clue could you have to its owner's identity?
Only what we can deduce.
From his hat?
Precisely.
You're joking. What can you gather from old battered felt?
You know my methods. Take a look. What can you gather about the man who has worn this article?
It's a very ordinary round black hat. Much worse for the wear. The lining is discolored, and I see that the internals have been crawled out on one side, and it's cracked. It's cracked and dusty and sported in several places, although there seems to have been some attempt to hide the discolored patches by sewing them with ink. I see nothing.
On the contrary, Watson, you see everything, but you fail to reason what you see. You're too timid about drawing inferences.
Pray tell me what you infer from this hat.
A few things are very distinct, and a few others represent at least a strong probability. The man was highly intellectual. That's obvious. Also, he was fairly well-to-do within the past 3 years, but he has now fallen upon evil days, and obviously his wife has ceased to love him.
My dear Holmes!
But he has retained some degree of self-respect. He goes out little, is middle-aged, has grizzled hair, which he had cut within the last few days, and which he dabs with lime cream. These are the more obvious facts. Also, by the way, it's unlikely that he has gas installed in his house.
You're joking, Holmes.
Not in the least. Even now, when I give you these results, is it possible you can't tell how they are attained?
I must confess that I'm unable to follow you. For example, how did you deduce that this man is intellectual?
Look at the size of this hat. It falls down over my eyes. A man with such a large brain must have something in it.
And you decline of his fortune?
This is a hat of the very best quality. Look at the ribbed silk band and the excellent lining. But these flat brims curled at the edges were in fashion 3 years ago. If this man could buy such an expensive hat back then and hasn't bought a new one since, then he's obviously gone down in the world.
Well, I suppose that's clear, though. But how can you be sure that he's retained his self-respect?
He tried to conceal some of the stains on the felt by daubing them with ink. That's a sign that he's still concerned with making a respectable hat.
Your reasoning is certainly plausible.
That he is middle-aged, that his hair is grizzled, that it has recently been cut, and that he uses lime cream can be gathered from a close examination of the lower part of the lining. I see a large number of hairs, clean cut by the barber's scissors. They all appear to be sticky, and there is a distinct odor of lime cream. This dust on the hat, you will observe, is not the gritty gray dust of the street, but the fluffy brown dust of the house. It shows that the hat has been hung up indoors most of the time.
But his wife, you said that she ceased to love him.
This hat hasn't been brushed in weeks. My dear Watson, if your wife ever allowed you to go out with a week's accumulation of dust on your hat, I shall fear that you too have lost your wife's affection.
But he might be a bachelor.
He was bringing home the goose as a peace offering to his wife. Remember the card on the bird's leg.
You have an answer to everything, but how on earth do you deduce that the gas has not been installed in his house?
One or two tallow stains might come by chance, but when I see five, there can be little doubt that the person must be in frequent contact with burning tallow. He probably walks upstairs at night with his hat in one hand and a candle in the other. He never got tallow stains from a gas jet.
Well, it's very ingenious, but since there has been no crime committed and no harm done, save to the loss that the goose, all this seems to be is a waste of energy. Heavy do-
Goose! Goose, Mr. Holmes! The goose, sir!
What of it? Has it returned to life and flapped off through the kitchen window?
See here, sir. See here. Sir, see what my wife has found in its crop.
By Jove, Peterson, this is treasure indeed. Do you know what you've got?
A diamond? It cuts glass as though it were butter.
It's more than a precious stone. It is the precious stone.
Not a countless of Morcar's blue carbuncle.
Precisely. I've read the advertisement about it in the Times every day lately. It is absolutely unique, and its value can only be guessed. The reward offered is 1,000 pounds.
1,000 pounds? Great Lord of mercy!
That's the reward. In fact, I think the Countess would part with half her fortune to recover this gem.
If I remember correctly, it was lost at the Hotel Cosmopolitan.
On December 22nd, just 5 days ago, a plumber named John Horner was accused of stealing it from the lady's jewel case. There's an account of the matter here in this morning's paper.
Hotel Cosmopolitan Jewel Robbery. John Horner, 26, plumber, was brought up upon the charge of having, upon the 22nd of December, abstracted from the jewel case of the Countess of Morcar the valuable gem known as the Blue Carbuncle. James Ryder, upper attendant at the hotel, gave evidence that he had shown Horner up to the dressing room of the Countess on the day of the robbery in order that he might solder the second bar of the grate, which was loose. He remained with Horner for some time, but finally was called away. Upon returning, he found that Horner had disappeared. The bureau had been forced open, and the small leather casket in which the Countess kept her jewelry lay empty on the dressing table. Ryder instantly gave the alarm, and Horner was arrested the same evening. But the stone could not be found either upon his person or in his rooms. Catherine Kusick, maid to the Countess, stated that she heard Ryder's cry of dismay on discovering the robbery and to having rushed into the room where she found matters as described by the last witness. Inspector Bradstreet, B Division, gave evidence as to the arrest of Horner, who struggled frantically and protested his innocence in the strongest terms. Evidence of a previous conviction for robbery was given against the prisoner. Horner showed signs of intense emotion during the proceedings. He fainted away at the conclusion and was carried out of court.
So much for the police court. The question for us is the sequence of events leading from a rifled jewel case to the crop of a goose in Tottenham Court Road. You see, Watson, our little deductions have suddenly assumed a much less innocent aspect. Here is the stone. The stone came from the goose, and the goose came from Mr. Henry Baker, the gentleman with the bad hat, and all the other characteristics with which I have bored you. Now we must set ourselves to finding this gentleman and ascertaining what part he has played in this little mystery. We must try the simplest means first. We shall place a notice in all the evening papers.
What will you say in the notice?
Give me a pencil and that slip of paper. Now then, found at the corner of Goodge Street, a goose and a black felt hat. Mr. Henry Baker can have the same by applying at 6:30 this evening at 221B Baker Street.
But we have to see it.
He's sure to keep an eye on the papers. To a poor man, the loss was a heavy one. He must have bitterly regretted the impulse that caused him to drop the bird. Everyone who knows him will recognize his name in the notice and will direct his attention to it. Here you are, Peterson. Run down to the advertising agency and have this put in the evening papers.
Which one, sir?
Oh, the Globe, the Star, the Palma, and any others that occur to you.
Very well, sir. And the stone?
I shall keep the stone for now. And I say, Peterson, buy a goose on your way back and leave it here with me. We must have one to give to this gentleman in place of the one your family is now devouring. Look at this stone, Watson. See how it sparkles? Of course it's a focus of crime. Every good stone is. This one was found less than 20 years ago in the banks of the Amoy River in southern China. It is remarkably like the carbuncle, except that it's blue instead of ruby red. It already has a sinister history. There have been two murders connected with it, a suicide, and several robberies. Who would think something so pretty could lead so many to the prison and the gallows? I'll lock it up in my strong box and drop a line to the Countess to say that we have it.
Do you think that this Horner is innocent?
I can't tell.
Well, do you think that this Henry Baker had anything to do with it?
I think it's likely that Henry Baker had no idea that the bird he was carrying was more valuable than even if it were made of solid gold. I shall determine that by a very simple test, if we have an answer to our notice in the papers.
In the meantime, I shall continue my professional round. I'll come back this evening. I like to see the solution of this tangled business.
Very well. I dine at 7. There is a Woodstock, I believe. In view of recent occurrences, perhaps I should ask the cook to examine its crop. Mr. Henry Baker, I believe. Take this chair by the fire. It's a cold night. Hello, Watson. You've come at just the right time. Is this your hat, Mr. Baker?
Yes, sir. It is.
We've kept these things for you for some days now, expecting to see a notice from you giving your address. Why didn't you place a notice in the papers?
Shillings haven't been so plentiful with me as they once were. I figured the gang of toughs who attacked me had carried off both my hat and the bird. I didn't care to spend more money trying to recover them.
Naturally. By the way, about the bird, we were compelled to eat it.
To eat it? Oh, no.
It would only have spoiled if we hadn't done so. But I presume this other goose on the sideboard will serve you just as well.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Of course. We still have the feathers, legs, crop, and so on of your own bird, if you wish to have them.
As relics of my adventure? Oh, sir, I'll confine my attentions to the excellent bird I perceive there on the sideboard.
There's your hat, then, and there's your bird. By the way, could you tell me where you got the other one from? I've seldom seen a better-grown goose.
Well, there are a few of us who frequent the Alpha Inn near the museum. This near our good host, Windigate by name, started a goose club. We put in a few pence every week, and we were each to receive a bird at Christmas. I put in my pence, and you know the rest. I'm very much indebted to you. Good evening.
So much for Mr. Henry Baker. It's quite certain he knows nothing whatever about the matter. Are you hungry, Watson?
Not particularly.
Then I suggest we follow up this clue while it's still hot.
By all means.
Your beer should be excellent if it's as good as your goose.
My geese?
Yes. I was speaking half an hour ago to Mr. Henry Baker, who is a member of your goose club.
Ah, yes. But you see, sir, they're not our geese.
Whose are they, then?
Well, I got 2 dozen from a salesman in Covent Garden.
Which one was it?
Breckenridge is his name.
Here's to your good health. Thank you, and good night. Now for Mr. Breckenridge. Remember, Watson, though we have a goose at one end of this chain, at the other end is a man who will get 7 years penal servitude unless we can establish his innocence. Faces to the south, then, and quick, march! Good evening. It's a cold night. Sold out of geese, I see.
I'll let you have 500 tomorrow morning.
I'm afraid that's no good.
Well, there are some on the stall over there.
But I was recommended to you.
By who?
Mr. Windigate, the landlord of the Alpha.
Oh, yes. I sent him a couple dozen.
They were fine birds, too. Where did you get them from?
Now then, mister, what are you driving at? Let's have it straight.
It's straight enough. I'd like to know who sold you the geese that supplied you that supplied the Alpha.
Well, I won't tell you. So there.
Why should you get upset over a simple question?
You'd be upset, too, if you were as pestered as I am. Where are the geese? And who did you sell the geese to? And what will you take for the geese? You'd think they were the only geese in the world for all the fuss.
I have no connection with all the other people who've been making inquiries. I'm just trying to settle a bet. I have a fiver on it that the bird I ate was bred in the country.
Well then, you've lost your fiver. It was town bred.
Impossible.
It's town bred, I say.
I don't believe it.
Think you know more about fowls than I do? I tell you, all those birds that were sent to the Alpha were town bred.
You'll never persuade me to believe that.
Well, you bet then.
I'd just be taking your money. I know I'm right, but I'll bet you a sovereign.
Take a look at the ledger. This is the list of the folk I buy from. Here on this page are the country folk, and the number after their names are where their accounts are. Now then, you see this other page in red ink? Well, that's a list of my town suppliers. Now, look at the third name. Read it out to me.
Mrs. Maggie Oakshot, 117 Brixton Road.
And what's the last entry in the ledger?
December 22nd, 24 geese at 7 shillings 6 pence.
And underneath?
Sold to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha at 12 shillings.
What do you say to that?
Well, Watson, we're nearing the end of our quest. It's clear from what that surly fellow told us in there that others besides ourselves are anxious about the matter. And I should think...
Lots of shouting!
I've had enough of you and your geese. If you come pestering me any more, I'll set the dog at you. Bring Mrs. Oakshot, and I'll answer her. But what have you got to do with it?
One of these geese was mine.
Well then, ask Mrs. Oakshot.
She told me to ask you.
Well, you can ask the King of Prussia for all I care. I've had enough. Get out!
Watson, this may save us a visit to Brixton Road. Sir, may I have a word with you?
Who are you? Who are you? What do you want?
I couldn't help overhearing the questions you put to the salesman just now. I think I can be of assistance to you.
Who are you? How do you know anything about this matter?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. It's my business to know what other people don't know.
But you can't know anything about this.
I know everything about it. You're trying to trace some geese that were sold by Mrs. Oakshott of Brixton Road to a salesman named Breckenridge, by him in turn to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha, and by him, his club, of which Mr. Henry Baker is a member.
Oh, sir, you're just the man I've been longing to meet. I can hardly explain to you how interested I am in this matter.
I'll hail this cab, and we can discuss the matter back at my apartment. But pray tell me, who are you?
My name is John Robinson.
No, the real name. It's always awkward doing business with an alias.
Well then, my real name is James Ryder.
Precisely so. Head attendant at the Hotel Cosmopolitan. Step into the cab, and I'll soon tell you everything you wish to know. Here we are. You look cold, Mr. Ryder. Take a seat by the fire. Now then, you want to know what became of those geese?
Yes, sir.
Or rather, I fancy you'd like to know about one particular goose. I believe it was white with a black bar across the tail?
Oh, sir, can you tell me where it went to?
It came here.
Here?
Yes, and a most remarkable bird it proved to be. I don't wonder you taken an interest in it. It laid an egg after it was dead. The brightest little blue egg that ever was seen. I have it here in my strong box. The game's up, Ryder. You're not cut out to be a felon. I have almost all the proofs I could possibly need, so there isn't much more you need to tell me. Before she came to your hotel, you had heard of the Countess of Morcar and her blue stone?
It was Catherine Cusick who told me.
I see. Her ladyship's waiting maid. Well, the temptation of sudden wealth was too much for you, as it has been for better men before you. It seems to me, Ryder, that you have the making of a very pretty villain. You knew that this man, Horner, the plumber, had been concerned in such matters before, and that suspicion would easily rest upon him. What did you do then? You invented some small job in the Countess's room. You and your confederate, Mrs. Cusack, and you made sure that Horner was the man sent for. Then, when he had left, you rifled the jewel case and raised the alarm and had the poor man arrested.
Have mercy on me. Think of my father and mother. It would break their hearts. I never went wrong before. I never will again. I swear, don't bring it into court.
It's very well to cringe and crawl now, but you thought little enough of poor Horner and the dock for a crime he didn't even know about.
I'll leave the country, Mr. Holmes. Then the charge against him will break down.
We'll talk about that later. First, let's hear a true account of what happened. How did the stone get into the goose, and how did the goose get into the open market? Tell us the truth. It's your only hope.
I'll tell you just what happened. When Horner had been arrested, I thought I'd better hide the stone. The police might take it into their heads to search me and my room. There was no place in the hotel where it would be safe. I went out and headed for my sister's house. She had married a man named Ukshot and lived in Brixton Road, where she fattened fowls for the market. All the way there, every man I knew seemed to be a policeman or a detective. As soon as she saw me, my sister knew something was wrong.
What's all the commotion out here? What's going on?
We had a terrible robbery at the hotel today. You'll read about it in the papers. It's very upsetting. I'll sit in the yard for a while and try to calm down.
What were you trying to do with that bird? Oh, wait, hold on. What? Wait. That's wrong. Take a look at the geese while you're out there. One of them's yours for Christmas.
Mr. Holmes, I have a friend called Mosley who went to the bad. I made up my mind to go see him and take him into my confidence. He'd tell me how to turn the stone into money. And I thought of the agonies I went through getting to my sister's house. How could I get to Mosley's place? Suppose the police stopped me on the road. They'd find the stone in my pocket. Then I looked at the geese waddling around my feet, and all of a sudden, an idea came into my head. I knew how I could beat the best detective that ever lived. I would take my goose now, and in it, I'd carry my stone. I picked out a fine big bird, white with a barred tail. I caught it and pried open its bill. I stuck the stone down its throat as far as my finger could reach. The bird gave a gulp, and I felt the stone pass along its gullet and down into its crop.
What's the matter? What's all the commotion out there? What's going on?
Oh, now look, the brute got away from me.
What were you trying to do with that bird?
Well, you said one of them is mine for Christmas, and I picked it out.
We chose one for you already. It's the big white one over there. There are 26 of them. So that makes one for you, one for us, and 24 for the market.
Thank you, Maggie, but if it's all the same to you, I'd rather have the one that I am holding just now.
The other one is a good 3 pounds heavier. We fattened it up just for you.
Never mind. I'd rather have the other one, and I'll take it right now.
Oh, do what you like. This one... Which one do you want?
The white one with the barred tail, right in the middle of the flock.
Oh, all right. Kill it and take it with you.
I did what she said, Mr. Holmes, and I carried the bird all the way to Mosley's house. I told him what I had done, and he laughed until he choked. We got a knife and opened the goose, and my heart turned to water. There was no sign of the stone, and I knew there'd been a terrible mistake. I left the bird and rushed back to my sister's, but there was not a bird to be seen in the yard.
James, you're back already?
Where are all the geese, Maggie?
Gone to the dealer's.
Which dealer?
Breckenridge. In Covent Garden.
Well, was there another one with a barred tail? Another one that looked like the one I'd picked out?
Yes. There were 2 barred-tailed ones. I could never tell them apart.
Well, then, Mr. Holmes, I saw it all, and I ran off as hard as my feet would carry me to the man Breckenridge. But he had already sold the lot, and not one word he would tell me as to where they'd gone. You heard yourselves tonight. My sister knows I'm going mad. Sometimes I think so myself. But now I'm a branded thief without ever touching the wealth.
Get out!
What, sir? Oh, heaven bless you.
No more words. Get out. If Horner were in danger, Watson, it would be another thing. But this fellow would not appear against him, and the case will collapse. I suppose I'm committing a felony, but it is just possible that I'm saving a soul. This fellow won't go wrong again. He's too frightened. Send him to jail now, and you make him a jailbird. Besides, 'tis the season of forgiveness.
Chance gave us a singular problem, and solution gave us a reward.
If you will have the goodness to touch the bell, Doctor, we will begin another investigation. In this one, too, a bird will be the chief treasure. Let us deduce what my cook has prepared for our supper.
Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat. Please to put a penny in the old man's hat. Please to put a penny in the old man's hat. If you have no penny, a halfpenny will do. If you have no halfpenny.
There you go. All right. All right.
All right, well, let's give another hand to our Braille is Beautiful players.